Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Human Mutaharian, who is the Chief Revenue Officer at LendingPoint. Human, thanks for joining me today.
Good afternoon, Karen. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving.
Wonderful, wonderful. How about yours?
It was very, very nice. And the topic that we're going to talk about today, I think, is actually quite timely given the holiday season, the appetite for using credit, and the inability for some consumers to get it. And we'll talk a little bit about your perspective on that and how you're actually addressing that through LendingPoint. But let me give you a statistic or two to start us off. I was looking at some data recently published by TransUnion, and they said that there are, call it, 196 million consumers that have access today to some sort of revolving credit account, whether that's issued by a bank or a private label product via a merchant, and that 142.5 million of those consumers actually revolve those balances, and those balances have grown about 7% year over year. There are some signs, however, that they've observed that originations of those credit accounts are declining, which suggests that banks are reevaluating who they're extending credit to, which I think is a great lead-in to our discussion. Before I use a couple of other data points to start our conversation, Human, how do you react to that?
Look, overall, I think for consumers or corporations, as a matter of fact, having access to credit is a good thing, mm-hmm. right? In the long term, everybody benefits from it, and you know, really, credit is really, the way I look at it, is that it's a bridge. It's a bridge to the future. Mm-hmm. However, I would argue that it needs to be responsibly. I mean, lenders need to be responsible, and consumers need to be responsible. Over leverage is never a good story for anybody, and we've lived through deleveraging processes in the past, and yep. we just have to be very, very careful with that.
Yep. So I would agree with you. As many things, in moderation is the key. But let's begin to talk about the other side of the coin, and that is those living in the U.S. that perhaps don't have access, but may in fact need it. So let's start with the first data point, 57%. That is the percentage of Americans with less than $1,000 in their savings account. And we've heard these kinds of statistics before. They're always shocking to hear them again. Your thoughts?
Like, I mean, you know, you mentioned 169 million people having access to a revolving line, right? The reality is not everybody has the same amount of access.
Right.
And, you know, in the near prime space where we operate, you know, we define near prime as, you know, 600 to 660, maybe we take it all the way up to 700 FICO, where there are 50 million Americans and 57% of overall Americans less than $1,000, you know, they don't have access to credit markets. They don't have access to banking. These guys, I mean, the way we like to think about it is that they're very deserving, mm-hmm. but yet underserved. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the economy, the recovery, as you think through it, has not been equal for everybody. Mm-hmm. You can just look at how average income in the last 15 years, even before the recession, how average income has grown, right? I mean, the top 40%, right, have benefited a lot more than the lower 60%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the disparity in average income, as you can see out there in the country, has grown. And that is causing the issue. The fact that people have less saving has to do with the fact that incomes are not growing as the cost of life has, right? I mean, and, you know, just look at student loans, right? The cost of a student, you know, to be a student today is very expensive to be a student in America. Mm-hmm. Extremely expensive. That's an issue. It is extremely expensive, you know, to be poor in America, mm-hmm. because a lot of the costs that you have to pay that actually fixed costs, the banking costs, the overdraft fees are the same no matter what the income level, right? And I think that people have learned how to work around this, how to live it, but the reality is, you know, there is a dichotomy in the marketplace, and the access to the capital markets is still very limited for a big percentage of the population out there.
So you mentioned that your piece of the lending market is the near prime consumer. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But what do the 57% of Americans with less than $1,000 saved do when an emergency arises that's $2,500?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, they don't have necessarily access to credit cards, right? The credit card limits are very low for these people. Based on the math that I've seen out there, average credit line for some of these people can be, from $1,500 to $2,500. And when they start using the card, their limits get actually reduced instead of increased, right? If you have a high kind of card utilization, so it's very difficult. Like in our space at LendingPoint, I can tell you we're working very hard to give access to these people, access of money. Medical expenses can happen, for example, right? And they need to have access to cash because to cover their copay and deductibles. And we work very hard at trying to figure out to understand how we can better serve this consumer base. And there are a lot of different ways we go about it. I'm sure we'll talk about it, but thing is very, very important, in this, specifically in this consumer base, to listen to the consumer, understand their needs, and try to fulfill them. If somebody has an 850 FICO, I would argue, it's very easy to serve that customer base, right? I mean, that's just the reality of it. They have access to mortgage, everything that they really desire. But in this segment, because of lack of data first, and we can talk more about it, inconsistency of data that exists actually in America today. And secondly, because of the issues that the banks have around underwriting these people, right, because of the capital requirements, et cetera, I think that's where we come in. And through our platforms, through our data capabilities, by listening to their needs, by better understanding what they want to do with it, how we can help them, I think we're making a big difference today.
Do we have we lost the savings culture or discipline, do you think? I mean, I can remember, growing up, my father in particular would emphasize the importance of saving. Even if it was just a little bit of money, there was the discipline of putting something aside every week. And I used to watch him do that. He and my mother would have the envelope system, and they would save money that way. Have we lost that?
Depends what segment you're talking to, right? I mean, there are some segments of people I think they're saving and that culture still exists, like you and I would say, right? We have to kind of live within our means. I think that's where you're kind of going. There is a segment, the millennial today are changing the way, in this sharing economy, they kind of look at the role of money very differently from what how we grew up with, right? They share everything from cars to houses to many other kind of different products and services that they have access to. Overall, I would say, a portion of it, there is a segment of the population that needs to save more. Completely agree with you. They need to better prepare for the future, and I think that's a very responsible thing to do.
Yeah, it
There are countries out there, I'm sorry, there are countries out there, not that to kind of, like Canada, where the actually consumer debt to GDP is higher than in the US or Japan, right? So it's just the reality that it's the world that we live in, but I think it's good to be responsible and safe. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some interesting innovators that are trying to make it automatic, savings automatic. But I think we've lost a little bit of that discipline, perhaps. But it gets me to the next data point, and you touched on it earlier, and that's 50 million, and that is the number of people in the U.S. that are near prime. And in your definition, that is the 600 to 700 FICO band. So, Houman, are these people historically not given access to credit or given access to credit in very constrained ways?
What's interesting to us is that in this, in this segment, 600 to 700, first of all, yes, there are 50 million people today, roughly, out of a total population of 200 million FICO numbers that exist out there. But what's interesting, Karen, is that Every American, what they have in common is that besides the American passport for citizenship or residenceship, is that they have actually been in a 600 to 700 FICO band at some time in their life. Nobody's born 80, nobody's born 400, right? Everybody throughout the life cycle, the life journey, they've gone actually through this band. That's just the reality of it. But the way we're looking at it is that this is a cycle of life, right? And it happens for many people. You could be a student. You could be actually, believe it or not, a self-employed person. Many self-employed person in America actually fall in the 600 to 700 FICO band. And as they're kind of building their life, right? They could be people who are actually they've gone through a bad divorce. They could be people actually who are who've had a recent bankruptcy. They could be a lot of retirees. A lot of retirees actually fall in this FICO band. So the way we look at it is that this FICO band kind of represents really the life cycle or journey of every American when you think about it, from being student all the way to retirement. And through the power of data technology products, we're actually trying to make a difference to better underwrite this population.
So I'm gonna refrain from commenting, but I'm gonna do that in the context of the third data point, which is 10,000, and I think it'll get to the question that I was going to ask you, and that's the number of attributes that you assemble to help provide a better profile of an individual's ability to use credit responsibly. If 600 to 700 represents kind of a point in time, the journey through a person's life cycle, how do you know that it's a temporary point in time and not a way of life?
For a retiree, it could be a way of life, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with you. So it really depends kind of where you are in the life cycle, right? I think I can answer that question. Look, this is a little bit of a geeky answer, but I think it's important to frame why we're doing what we're doing. Usually lenders leverage credit bureau data to underwrite, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they can augment it with a lot of other data sets, but the starting point is really credit bureau data. And, what credit bureau information does is it explains at a very high level, it explains very well the expense side of a consumer, how much money a consumer is spending on car, on a mortgage, right, on a credit card, etc. There's a very good job there. The reality is, the lenders, what they're trying to do, they're trying to use this out-of-pocket behavior of the consumer and infer income behavior. The biggest issue, I would say, with FICO or credit bureau data is that it doesn't have the income side of the ledger. It just focuses on the liability and the expense side of it, right? The thing is, when you think about the role of credit bureau information in the United States today, there are really three core assumptions that people make when they leverage this data set. Number one, and I think the most critical, especially in the 600 to 700 FICO band, is the fact that the lenders, they believe they have a complete view of the entire consumer expense behavior, that they understand what's happening. The reality is there is substantial amount of credit reporting disparity. At the 850 FICO band, okay, most credit bureaus actually they have pretty much the same data on the consumer. But when you get into the 600 to 700 FICO band, when you kind of deal with somebody who lives in Paris, Texas, for example, okay, they might be reporting their information through multiple different credit bureaus. And the fact that these credit bureaus, because they have different relationship with different institutions out there, they actually pick up different aspects of the expense behavior of the consumer. So the issue here is right actually in the 600 to 700 FICO band, this problem is the highest right now. The fact that there is huge disparity. Even though I can show you, credit bureau information where one bureau says this guy has $600,000 worth of debt and another bureau says zero.
But why is that?
Because different institutions report to different bureaus. Chase, I mean, the big banks in the United States, they report to all bureaus. Mm-hmm. When you're working in a country where there are tens of thousands of financial institutions, probably 3,500 banks, don't quote me, this is the numbers I've seen out there. They actually might have relationship with very specific trade bureau, instead of reporting all them but to one. The problem is in this 600 to 700, the amount of data gap that you see is leverage. It's huge. how do you solve those problems? Just, you know, and by the way, this is just created bio data. I haven't even touched on alternative data and all this other stuff, right? So, I mean, where we are in our journey is that we have actually gone back and take a serious view around all the assumptions we are making when we're underwriting these people, okay? One of the assumptions is all the, when you look at trade bureau information, one of the core assumptions is that all the lenders are rational when they lend money, because they lend money to somebody. So when you look at how much debt they have, a lender, a new, you know, the new lender is assuming that the previous lender has made a rational decision. Well, during the mortgage crisis, we saw somebody who was making $50,000 get a $750,000, $1 million loan to buy a house. Right. Nothing wrong with it, but reality is when you look at the amount of debt that was kind of pushed to people, or people take it, doesn't matter how you want to look at it, but the amount of debt that got transferred, those were wrong decisions. How do you account for the fact that there was a student who, you know, a guy who had just, you know, come out of their college, they got a $50,000, you know, annual salary, and they got a very high mortgage, and they had to default on it. Do you want to, how do you think about it today, right? So we spend a lot of time, you know, putting all the assumptions, and by the way, I really mean it when I tell you that we want to be responsible lender. We're not going to the degree that we can, we always want to make sure that we actually turn down some consumers, and I've had many discussions with them as well, by the way, where we think the lending was just not responsible. So we stop that. And we're trying to take, because we take our role very seriously, and we want to be responsible, and we're going to grow accordingly. But, you know, we're taking, you know, we are looking at the entire holistic view of all the assumptions that are made and go back at them and look at them with a fresh pair of eyes and come up with new information out there and new technology. AI is a fantastic platform that can solve a lot of these issues, actually, right? How you think about technology to solve data gap issues in the country today. Many examples.
So let me ask you a question about what you see with your 10,000 attributes that others don't to a population that traditional lenders think, you know, is just too risky.
Like, I mean, the understand the risk piece of it, right? But we are in this segment because we think, again, 50 million people deserve like credit, but you know, but they are underserved, and we think really through part of our data. I mean, look, we have a lot of data points. You know, obviously the credit bureau information, we augment them with the employment history of the consumer. We need to make sure that we understand how they're kind of behaving throughout the life cycle. We want to make sure we understand what the use of the money is. The use of the money is so critical. You know, and we are also looking at a lot of partnerships, Karen, to kind of augment our data set. We need to think at the problems very differently than with the historical lens. Let me give you an example. We are actually offering our products right now in some selected hospitals. But the way we've gone about it, we'd like to call it point of need financing, not point of sale financing. At the point of sale, there are many excellent solutions out there, PayPal, Amazon, you know, pay with your phone, etc. We are at a point of need, and where we can collect better data, other types of data, with compliance with all the applicable laws and underwrite the consumer differently. In this specific process, we're actually running on the insurance rails. When a consumer goes and they put their insurance data, they give their insurance data to the doctor, and the doctor is trying to figure out how much is the copay and deductible, a lot of information has been shared in this point in time. You know, making sure that, again, we're compliant with all the regulations within HIPAA and, you know, lending regulations, but actually picking up the appropriate amount of data in this process. And on the rails, we're actually underwriting the consumer and make an offer to them at that point in time. Doctor offices, hospitals like it because the transaction is way upstream through the power of data, not only, you know, in this case, not only lending data, but other type of data sets out there, in this case, insurance data sets, we're able to augment data, completely change the consumer experience. These are prospects, I mean, what we call them prospect, not existing consumers, with whom we're literally speaking have two or three clicks, approval process, you know, application process. And these things, we really believe in the role of data and information differently. Mobile is another example. Mobile is really telephone phones are changing how the economy is operating. How can you pick up the right data set from a phone and work with the consumer, right? These are the things we spend a lot of time, and we really like our, you know, we're really trying to work with two partnerships to augment our data set and distribution and change the economics of the product. That, by the way, is the way you can start serving this consumer base that you were not able to serve.
So I want to go back to something you said, which is how they're going to use the money, and the example that you just gave, which is a medical need. So, you know, in that situation, there is something that is a necessary treatment for whatever the medical condition, and access to funds, the use of the money, is to improve a person's health or physical condition in some way. So there seems to me to be more of an investment in being responsible about using that money and paying it back against, you know, maybe something where it's very much a disconnected relationship between the consumer and a merchant with a credit card of some kind, where there are things that are purchased, but it's with the financial institution, not necessarily something that benefits them directly. I don't know if I'm explaining this correctly, but hopefully you get the point that, you know, it does it really make a difference in how the money is being used as it pertains to how consumers then treat the debt and pay it back?
Well, you know, I understand your question, but let me tell you the problem we're solving here and why the consumers have a problem. Hopefully this clarifies. If today one of the problems of medical, you know, and there are many out there, and the more time we spend, by the way, the more we learn, but it's the following, is that when a consumer goes to the doctor, doctor says, hey, Homan, you have to go get your you need a surgery, you need a knee surgery, you have to go get your MRI, I want to make sure you check your heart, and we get to set you up at a surgery center, right? Just kind of get out of the context of the big medical facilities. Kind of, this is, you know, this is kind of more the experience of the average person, you know, in Midwest right now, okay? The reality is when Homan goes to the MRI center, he might not have the money and the credit card might be limited, right? Mm-hmm. I have to apply a loan at the MRI center. Mm-hmm. And they have many loan facilities out there. So I apply for my loan number one. When I go to check my heart, I might have to apply for another loan. By the time I get to the surgery center, I've gone through three applications in less than 30 days. My FICO has gone from 750 to 550. This is just just an example, right, to illustrate the problem. And I don't have the money for the last piece, which is the surgery. I'm stuck. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, the doctor office has actually scheduled the surgery room. And by the time, they ask me, hey, are you ready to go? You're due tomorrow. I said, I don't have the money. Mm-hmm. The problem is the lending solutions we have in this specific vertical for this problem, which is a very, very large problem, by the way, they don't work. Mm-hmm. Okay? Many people have tried it, but, I mean, going back with the same solutions over and over over the same problems, that is not going to solve it. You have to look at this very differently. What we're trying to do is to make sure that through one transaction, we can actually set it with three different centers, four different centers in this process, and make sure that from the time the consumer has applied with us to the doctor office, that we can send the money to all the three, four different centers who might be most probably who are part of the network, you know, part of the ecosystem in this process. And they know that we're going to settle money with them. That's where we're kind of working really hard because, if I just want to provide a traditional credit card, you know, we know it's not going to work. It has not worked. You know, definition of stupidity is to do the same things over and over and expecting different results, right? So we got to be very, very careful. What we are living in the world of technology right now, right? Technology is taking over. And there are a lot of ways we can leverage, you know, blockchain, right? How a blockchain transaction can, platform can enable this transaction, right? There are a lot of good things out there that we can put technology to the good use, and that's what we're working very hard, but it requires time, expertise, and patience. And that's what we're trying to solve.
Yeah, I think I'm going back to the point where the purpose of the loan is very personal. I have a medical issue. I need to have that fixed. I want to have the surgery in order to feel better, maybe even to be able to walk without pain, so that I can work. And I'm going to be conscientious about making sure that that loan is repaid. So if I'm a lender, if I'm you guys, I'm going to look at all these different variables and maybe add this extra dimension, which is the use of the money is to fix someone's serious health problem versus something else that could be important, but perhaps not quite as personal to the individual getting the fund. So I was just wondering if there was correlation there between credit worthiness and conscientious about repayment and how the money is being used.
And I think the answer to that is yes. You know, when you look at credit card companies, how they underwrite transactions, they might think very differently from use of money in one merchant versus another merchant,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that use of money is very, very important in any lending business, consumer or commercial. And I think understanding how people, now you cannot necessarily use some of that data, so you got to be very careful with
right.
that, but you can actually grow to specific verticals, right?
Right. So, you know, kind of wrapping up the conversation, you believe that there's a real opportunity to provide access to credit for individuals who may have trouble getting it or getting an adequate credit line at a fair rate of interest by just looking more carefully at a variety of attributes that help you establish their credit worthiness.
Yeah, credit or payments, by the way. You know, Karen, many times in this segment, people have the funds. It's going to take them time to come up with, right? And they just need to have access to a better payment method.
Mm.
And that's what we're trying to solve for, because, you know, a retiree, you know, a person who's retired, it might take them a couple of months to come up with the funds for a healthcare issue, right? And they just need a very short-term bridge. So how do you think about new payment methods for these people as well? Right, which is not necessarily tied to a long-term lending solution. That's what we're trying to do.
Is this the problem, the near prime? Is it getting better or worse in terms of their access to credit? Are banks loosening their requirements in your experience, or are they not?
You know, what we have heard, I mean, these are hearsays, is that a lot of some of our competitors, you know, they've been tightening risk lately, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the issue that you treat everybody, you have one solution, and you're trying to treat everybody the same way, it's just not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to kind of be specialized in this segment. I mean, you know, we believe in helping the underserved and the underbanked, and we live by it. And that's a segment that we work very hard at. You know, tightening happened lately. I think we've had some recent news in the marketplace, right, that these kind of tightening are happening.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, we are dedicated to this space, and we're working very hard to make sure that, obviously, we have to control for losses, right? I mean, we're running still an enterprise. We need to make money, but...
Sure.
We want to make sure that, you know, we make the difference in people's lives. That's what gets us going every day.
Interesting. Well, it's been fascinating to chat with you about the current state of credit, and in particular, the ability for those who perhaps can't access it on a consistent and regular basis. To actually do so. Thanks, Suman, for your time. I really enjoyed the conversation.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And thanks to everyone who joined us today. Have a great rest of the day and a good week. Bye-bye now.